Welcome to Milk Drunk by Bobby, a straight-up conversation about parenthood without the BS. We'll be featuring parenting experts, people you may recognize, and some people you might be meeting for the first time. Milk Drunk is brought to you by Bobby, the mom-founded and led organic formula brand evolving the conversation around how we choose to feed our babies. Our goal is to have open and honest conversations that make parents feel less alone. Think group chat energy, but I'm not going to complain to you about yet another water bottle that is not at all spill-proof. I'm your host, Angelica Temple, and today's episode is all about making mental health a priority, building your village, and redefining best. First, we'll be joined by author, parent, and oh yeah, Grammy-winning singer-songwriter Meghan Trainor. We talk about her new book, Dear Future Mama, her feeding journey, and her motherhood mantra, I'm doing my best. Then we're joined by economist, author, and parent Emily Oster. She breaks down her data-driven parenthood philosophy and her movement to shift the focus from what's best on paper to what's best for your family. Let's get into it. All right, I am so excited to share today's guest with you. She is a Grammy-winning pop singer and musician, a new author, and of course, she is your mother. Welcome, Meghan Trainor, to Milk Drunk.
That was awesome.
I mean, I like the internet and everybody else am obsessed. And I feel like I'm chanting, I am your mother in my head at all times. So yes. Thank you for that. It is an anthem. It's
You're
amazing.
Welcome.
You are a new-ish mom. I don't even know. You probably feel like, is Riley 2 now?
Yeah, he's 2. And I got another one on the way. I want 4. So I'm like, I'm halfway there.
Ooh, you are but working.
The more I have, the more I feel, the younger I feel, you know? I still feel like I'm 16 and pregnant. And I'm like, how am I going to do it?
Oh, that's amazing. Does it feel differently, this pregnancy, versus when you were pregnant with Riley?
Yeah, very different. And everyone warned me. And I was like, yeah, we'll see. Because my mom is like, it's all the same stuff, but it was very different, especially in the beginning. I had like bleeding with this one. So I didn't know exactly where I was and how far along I was because I was like, no, that was a period.
Right.
But it wasn't.
And when are you due?
July, hot July, which nobody in my family is born in July. So this will be different.
Maybe you'll get a Leo. I have a Leo. They're very fiery.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Great.
So your new book titled Dear Future Mama, a TMI guide to pregnancy, birth, and motherhood from your bestie is amazing. It is such an honest take on so many of the things we don't talk about. And we are here for it, of course. And I speed read it this week and do feel like your bestie. I kind of wish I had you when I was pregnant. Had your
I
book.
Know.
What drove you to share your sort of truth and experience?
I know. I was like all over the research because it was during COVID times when I was pregnant, so I couldn't do like the classes with other pregnant moms and I couldn't leave my house. So I was just online and I was getting so many mixed opinions and different ideas of how it should be done, you know, and there's no right way to do any of this and there's nothing wrong with my body and I'm doing the best I can, you know, and I wish there was a more real raw book out there that was like, my nipples feel like this today, or like I have stretch marks starting from my vagina, you know, like they're everywhere. I didn't know they could be down there, you know?
Oh my gosh. And also nipples like peeling and flaking apart.
Blistering. Yeah.
Like, because so strange.
I would Google and I think it's because people were trying to like, I don't know, not go into crazy details online. I don't know. I'm just like, it's 2023. Like we're all open books. We're all talking about everything now. Like hear me roar. Yeah, because I would Google like, why is it so hard to breastfeed? Like what makes it hard? And no one would say like the latching, or I was told my nips were too small. And I was like, is that a thing? So there's like so many factors that go into it. And I didn't get any of that before I was just thrown into it. So I wanted to write a book of like, by the way, this also happened that nobody warned me about. I didn't know what gestational diabetes was until I was diagnosed with it. Like a bunch of stuff that I was like, what? You know, where was this?
I feel like I was always collecting a bunch of different things and then sort of sitting with it and being like, okay, this is how I feel about this in this moment.
and yeah, it's going to change tomorrow.
It's just a bunch of information thrown at you. And then you're like, wait, everyone's going through this and we're all walking around like we're okay, you know?
Like, seriously. Oh my gosh.
We should talk about it, right?
Well, and I know one thing you've spoken really openly about is embracing your C-section scar and trying to find the beauty in what your body built. I had 2 C-sections.
That's going to be me.
And how do you feel now in this pregnancy about your body?
So good. That was my scary thing too. It's like, I lost all my pregnancy weight and then some. And I was like, finally learning with my dietitian who's in this book, like learning how to have a good relationship with food and learning how to because I want to learn that before I have babies, you know? And so I lost all this weight. I worked really hard and did it the healthy way. And then I was like, I'm going to get big again, you know? And I was like,
yes.
I have to get big. Like, there's no way around it, right? And then I was like, are there new stretch marks going to go over the other ones and crisscross? Like, what's that going to look like? Or are they going to pop up like on my butt? Like, where are they going to come from?
Double rainbow.
Yeah, Like, where are they coming from? I don't have any new ones, which is crazy, but I put on vitamin E oil. I noticed that helps with the scarring after.
Yes.
So I've been doing that, but. Yeah, it was a big mental. Now I'm like over it. I'm like, I'm big. This is great. I'm feeling great. I'm looking much healthier than my first pregnancy. But it was a mental thing that I noticed myself going into it. I was like, I'm going to get big, yep. You know?
But you've come back again. You're like, I can feel like myself after, right?
Yeah.
Shifting gears a little bit to feeding and that whole postpartum experience, you know, you have an entire chapter in your book called Fed is Best, which obviously we at Bobby are all about. One of the mantras you said in your book was, I'm doing my best. And something that we always say is, your best is best. Why do you think we're all obsessed with this best parenting culture? And how do you come to terms with your best?
Luckily, I'm proud of myself that I had a good mentality going into all of this. Like, I never had a birth plan. I was like, as long as he comes out and he's alive, you know, that's what we're going for. Like, I survive, he survives, get it out. And then with breastfeeding too, I was like, I don't know, I'll just try my best, you know? And I don't know if it's because of like how my body is or if it's because the C-section, he had to go to the NICU right away. So I never got skin to skin time. It took me a couple of days to even hold him. Because they wouldn't let me leave the bed. So his first skin to skin was with my hairy husband. But my milk supply was just like non-existent. I also like YouTubing what to bring to the hospital. And some girls were like, bring a pump. And some girls were like, well, your milk won't come for 3 days. So don't bring a pump. And I was like, what do you mean? I didn't know that when they roll you to your room, they go, pump, mama, pump. I go, what? Like, will something come out? And they're like, probably not. Like, I literally was learning as it was happening. And then it hurt really bad. And I said, is this supposed to hurt? And they're like, yeah, it's a bit uncomfortable. No, I was bleeding immediately.
Oh my gosh.
So then anytime after, I just went because I was also so drugged up still that I was like, it's probably supposed to hurt like hell, I bet. No. So I had to learn the tough way and just was like, okay. So off the bat, I had bloody nipples like day one with no milk, barely any colostrum. Like if we got a drip of colostrum, my husband would put on a Q-tip and run to the NICU and spread it in his mouth. Like that's how much we were getting. And I don't know if it's because I didn't get my skin to skin time, but my milk didn't come in for like a week. And then when my milk was fully there, because I would pump, I would get one bottle out of a whole day and night of pumping.
No.
I'd get one serving size. So we were like formula people from the hospital, you know?
Yes.
And it was chaos. And in the hospital, the nurses aren't legally allowed to help you with your formula. And our formula at the time was like the healthiest thing there was, that HIPAA one. And it was all in German.
I was given that too. Yep.
Yeah.
So I remember having to read translations.
No, my husband pulls it out and goes, uh-oh. And I was like, what's wrong? He's like, it's all in German. And I was like, well, let's ask the nurse to help us. And she was like, oh, legally, we can't help you. And I was like, what? I was like, so now what are we supposed to do? And luckily, my husband just went all over Google and searched. But that was like terrifying. I was like, my kid won't eat. So now what do we do?
Oh my gosh. No, I fully remember when I was switching to formula or supplementing with formula, one of my friends was like, oh, you have to use this. You know, it's from Europe and so on, which is obviously, you know, a huge impetus behind why Bobby was founded.
Yeah.
Did you ever worry about safety issues importing your formula? at the time?
No, yeah. Well, I just know my husband, because we had that dietitian and she changed our lives with food, we were like, what's in our child's food immediately? Ooh. And my husband did so much research and was like, there's so much crap in all these formulas, like cane sugar and just like nastiness. And he's like, what are we going to do? Like, we better hope you have milk, because like, I don't want to put this stuff in my kid. And then we were told like, oh, there's one brand across the world that is a little better. And we're like,
one
okay.
to rule them all.
Yeah. It comes from Germany. It might not make it. So it was so scary. So when I heard about this company, I was like, finally, like, thank God that they're here, because we need this.
One thing you mentioned in your book that I had never heard of was the special hell that is triple feeding. Can you explain what that means and what kept you going?
Oh, God. Yeah. So everyone, the doctors, the lactation specialists, everyone's like, oh, you got the worst case scenario. And I was like, oh, fun. Where like we would get up, there was a new technology, which was just a feeding tube taped to your boob. So a feeding tube with a syringe that my husband would push the formula through. And the feeding tube was taped to my nipple with like Scotch tape. This is the new and improved way.
Yes.
And that would hopefully be in his mouth with my nipple, and it would trick him and my body to think, wow, I'm breastfeeding and this is working. But I was told my nipples are too small, so our latch never was great. And so I would have a nipple shield. So then I would tape the thing into the nipple shield into his mouth, and it would just like squirt his eye. And he was like, and I was like, and then after that, I would try to normal breastfeed him. And if not, then I would pump while we fed him the bottle. And then it was just a nightmare every single night, all through the night. And my husband's like, hey, this isn't working. I was like, but they said, we got to try it. So we got to try it. And eventually, like, my pediatrician looked at me in the first few weeks and was like, hey, you don't look so good. He was like, your baby's not gaining weight. You don't look so good. Let's say we tried. Amazing. You're awesome. Well, let's just give him some formula. Like, let's just feed the kid, and you pump if you want, or stop pumping if you want. Like, my pediatrician was so cool of like, let's get you to a happier place because you look miserable. And I was like, I'm doing my best, man.
Yes.
But yeah, my kid loved his formula. He's so healthy, has no allergies. And we were like, okay, we're formula people. Let's just find the best of the best out there.
That's so great. I mean, one thing, so I didn't even know about combo feeding or supplement or like doing a little bit of both before even my kids were born, right? I didn't realize that 70% of formula feeding parents are combo feeding, kind of doing not quite what you described with all of those elements, but using a little bit of both. Is it something you knew about, or is it all something you learned after?
It was just like, if you don't make enough milk, here's like, make sure you have formula. And we're like, we do. And then they were like, but keep trying. And I was like, sure, we'll try. And my whole family, there were cows. My aunties, my mom, they all breastfed. Yeah. I thought, I was like, we're going to need to buy a fridge. I'm going to have so much breast milk. Like, we're going to donate. I couldn't make a bottle, you know?
Oh, man. Like,
and my husband would beg me to stop. Like, he was like, nobody's happy. You know, we don't have to do this. So,
yeah. I was just going to ask, what are your feeding plans for baby number two?
I think because my friend just had one and her milk supply has doubled, I'm like, well, maybe I could get two bottles and I'll just pump. Like, I think the first week I'm going to try to see how our latch is and see if that's successful or not. Because I would love to be I would love for that to work, you know, but if it doesn't, I'm cool with it not, you know? I always say, like, I'll try, and then I will accept it instead of torture myself for 3 months straight.
Yes. Because
I know I'm good with my formula, and I know it's good what's going into them, you know? So I can, like, go to sleep easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what was crazy is, like, I did a silly TikTok that was, like, I'm turning off the faucets. Like, I'm just going to stop breastfeeding after 3 months, which I was like, I'm a hero. I made it 3 months. And all my comments in the TikTok were, like, don't be ashamed. You did your best. I was like, huh? I was like, I wasn't ashamed. I was like, super proud of myself.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, fed is best. You tried. And I was like, no, I did. I did my best, and I win, I think, because I did that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh
my gosh. Yeah, no, it's so insane. What would you say to someone who's in that process, right postpartum, things are not going exactly as they expect on the feeding journey?
Luckily, it's annoying because especially when you just had a C-section, you have to go in 3 times that week and you're like, mm-hmm. standing up is hard, my guy. I'm going to go drive in a car and go to my pediatrician. But it's amazing. And all those appointments just made me feel so relieved when my pediatrician's like, he's perfect. Mm-hmm. He's healthy. He is growing the best amount of weight. Like, that's all we wanted to hear. And we didn't care how we got there. And my husband, we would just high five, like, we're crushing this, man.
Yes.
And looking at my baby when everyone's like formula, no formula, or like breastfeeding only. And I'm like, my baby's perfect, dude. So like, we did good, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have to ask, what formula are you going to use this time around?
This one, my body. No, we were so excited. We were screaming for joy. My husband, I can't tell you. I wish he was here because he is so excited that it's going to be in English, you know, that he can read the instructions.
Yes.
And already we've had so many parents come to us and be like, yo, which formula did you use for Riley? And we're like, no, 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 this new. And they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And we're like, yeah. We know.
Yes. Speaking of that, we're so excited that you're here because you are going to be joining the motherboard. What are you most excited about for joining our team?
I've never been on a motherboard before, so.
I know. It's the best name.
So I feel it's like so the hero, like I've been to space yes. and back. I'm so honored to be part of something that's actually amazing and going to help so many families. There's also like such a scary supply of formula out there. Remember when it was like scarce and Targets and stuff? And that's like not the best formula, you know? Like that's, imagine they have really good formula that's good for their kid. It's just so nice to have a great answer for my friends out there and text them the link and be like, check this out because it's a game changer.
That's so awesome. Shifting gears back to sort of those few months after you had Riley. And you're in that fourth trimester, and it is so tough. I'll never forget, my pediatrician said, and how are you doing? I said, oh, I'm great. You know, we're good. Like, kind of moving on. And she said, no, how are you doing? And I had this, like, I'm sorry. Who are you? I'm good. I'm fine. I'm healing okay. You know, I thought she was coming at me like a doctor. Like, oh, my scar is good. I'm starting to take longer walks. And she just said, listen to me. Mom's mental health is the most important health in your household.
Yeah.
And it was like this shock wave that sent through me. You know, I feel like we all have those moments where we're just not sure we're doing it right, you know? And we think to ourselves, I mean, all the time, it continues forever. It's waiting on the fourth trimester, right? And it's like the only alone time you get is in the shower. You know, for you, what were some of those lows like and what pulled you out?
The biggest lows I had were not even all that breastfeeding trauma was going back to work. At 3 months, I was doing a TV show and I had so much guilt, like the mom guilt ate me alive, where I would have to miss a whole day with him and then I'd miss, or I would work 12 hour day and I would run to get to bath time and get to bedtime. Mm-hmm. And I'd knock out because I was so tired. And my husband would have to come get me and be like, he's asleep, put him in the crib, you know? And I was just like fighting, trying my best. And my husband was trying to be like, give yourself some grace. Like, you're working, you're incredible, you're still healing. The mom guilt was very tough. Especially, you know how the kids say dada first? I was like, it's because he doesn't know me, you know? I took everything personally. I was like, he doesn't know I exist.
How did you nourish yourself at that time and how do you now? Like, how do you find, so there's mom guilt, there's work, there's being a mom, and then where does you time fit in? Whatever that means to you.
I know it's weird because my you time is like doing something productive and my husband begs me. He's like, can you just sit and stop? And I'm like, you don't understand. This gets me hyped. Like, I'm going to decorate my kid's room right now. Like, that's what gets me excited. He's like, stop moving. And he Like I rarely nowadays will be like, I need a massage or I need to go do something for myself. He yeah. booked me a massage yesterday and was like, get in there. And I was like, but I could be doing so many things in this time. And he was like, babe, I need you to lay down. And he was right. And after I was like, that's such a good idea, you know? So sleep and any time you can take for yourself, listen to people when they're looking at you and they're like, pause.
Mm-hmm. You know? It's so hard. I'm the same exact way. I want to be productive. I'm like, this is relaxing for me.
Yeah. I'm like making all these plans. His drawers. They're all messy.
But honestly, things like massages or meeting up with a friend for lunch, if it's scheduled relaxing time, I'll actually do it, right?
Yeah, literally.
One of the things, you know, that we always talk about on this podcast as part of why it exists is that, you know, just being able to talk candidly with people about parenthood, about motherhood, about all this feeding stuff. What does your village look like?
Yeah.
I know for me, it's a lot of it too, is just the support system that's like my parent text thread, like the group text.
Oh, I have a mommy group.
Oh my gosh. What is your, like, who is on your group text? What is it like? Is it popping off 24/7 like mine?
My group chat's really freaking cool. Prepare yourselves.
Okay.
It's Hilary Duff. It's Mandy Moore. It's Ashley Tisdale. It's so many moms in there. There's a professional chef in there, Gabi. What's Gabi cooking?
Oh my gosh.
But it's the best place. And I'll ask them anything. I'll be like, yo, we have a bee problem at my house. Anybody got a good bee guy?
Yes. That's so awesome. No, I mean, all the times that I find myself texting the most random things, what water bottle doesn't spill?
Oh,
what
yeah.
What snacks did you pack today?
I'll send we'll send pictures of our kids' body parts and be like, is this normal? Because what's this?
How do you feel like the group text and that support system helps your mental health?
Oh, significantly, because I know I'm not alone. They're so supportive, and we're all like hardworking mamas that are all trying to do a bunch of stuff. So we relate in that way. In my book, I say get you a mommy group because there's nothing better. And we've been together since our babies were 3 months old, and now they're all two.
Oh my gosh! So you all have babies the same age.
Yeah. It was like Hilary Duff texted me, was like, if I did like a music class, would you join? And I was like, what do you mean? My middle name is music. Yeah, we'll be there. And our kids were 3 months old. They couldn't sit. They couldn't set up.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is ridiculous, but I will find an excuse to come to Hilary Duff's house. So it was like the best. And then we all just became friends.
That is so amazing. I mean, on that note, obviously we're all obsessed with mother. How important is it for you that your art reflects what's going on in your life? And how does it feel putting your whole self out there?
It kind of just happens. Yeah. But I saw how much it affected so many strangers and helped them. My friend once told me, she's like, you talk about like all my insecure thoughts that I am too nervous to say out loud and you sing about them. And I was like, yeah, because I do it for me. Like, that's why I wrote this book. You know, I wish I read something like this when I was going through it. I wish I had songs like this when I was going through it. I wish there was like a mother anthem. And I was like, let's write mother, you know?
I mean, I have to also tell you, because you brought up All About That Bass, which we are, of course, obsessed with and have been for almost 10 years. What?
Crazy. Decade.
We always sing All About That Bobby. It's embarrassing. It's amazing. Really? It's so true.
It's not embarrassing. It's like that's iconic.
It's the best. Oh,
when I got in my book, when I got my C-section and I was rolled out of the room, I heard someone blasting All About That Bass. And I was so drugged up and I was like, this is my song.
Yes, and apparently, that's like, so perfect.
A mom or someone was celebrating that I was there while they were having a C-section and was like, let's play your song.
Yes.
It was the best, coolest moment of my life.
That is such a good moment. One thing I love too, obviously your family's all around you, including on your TikTok.
Yep.
What inspired you to put yourself out there in that like much more raw way than other places we've seen?
I started being more vulnerable. Like since the beginning of my career, I'm like, here's who I am. Here's what it is. And people loved that. And people related to that made me feel not alone. Then when I started to have my mental health issues, like when I started to have panic disorder and started hearing other celebrities talk about that, Carson Daly talked about what a panic attack is. I sent it to my mother. I said, this is how I'm feeling. And that like opened up a whole new world for us. Then I started talking about my mental health once I got a handle on it. And that started helping more fans. So then I was like, I'm just going to be an open book because this is who I am. And I don't want to like shame any part of who I am anymore. And so now I'm fully an open book and talk, and I'm just vulnerable and honest. And I do that on my TikTok as well. And I just see it like translating with people, and they get it, and they're relating to me. And it's just like my whole community now, and a whole new fan base that I have, and people and friends that I'm making on this TikTok. And it's like a fun new place to show my new songs and be just vulnerable and honest and feel like, it is what it is. Are you with me?
Yes.
You know?
Yes, you are. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
What are your go-to lullabies for Riley?
We sing. We make up a lot of songs together, but he sings. He's been singing more than talking. Oh. It's so funny. What else? Oh, his new jam and his new girlfriend in life is Dora. He loves Dora the Explorer. He's like, Dora? Oh, yes. And we sing that. And he loves it. And Little Einsteins because the rocket ship.
That's so
cute. There's a lot. Well, we sing a bunch.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Megan. This has been incredible. You are a dream. Best of luck to your new baby boy, this pair of brothers. And I'm so excited. This is just the beginning of our Bobby journey together. It's amazing.
I'm so excited. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us, Megan. And now I am thrilled to bring on yet another brilliant, culture-shifting member of the Bobby Village, author and economist Emily Oster. Welcome, Professor Emily Oster.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be with you, but also to be part of Bobby. And this whole thing is, I'm just excited.
Yes, yes. We're going to get into it later. As an avid subscriber of everything that you put out in the world, I feel like the data you present actually makes me feel more relaxed in my parenting. It doesn't make me feel like, oh, there's too much information. I'm freaking out. I'm like, okay, I can sit with this. I can take it and do what I will with it. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to specialize in this and how data can help us be better informed and relaxed parents?
So the short answer to how I get into this is that I got pregnant, as one does, yes. quite a long time ago now. And, you know, I was working, I mean, I am now, but I was working as an economist. So my job is economics professor. I work on health and data stuff. And I basically found myself sort of using all of the tools in my job kind of in the service of my pregnancy and trying to understand the data behind many of the things I was being advised, some of which I didn't completely agree with or like. And it really sort of spurred a kind of total, basically a total career shift into using these tools that I had found to be so, you know, productive in my professional life, in my like economist life, but using them in the direction of pregnancy and parenting. And I really feel very strongly that that data, that understanding data is really important for making good decisions. And also, as you say, like can be relaxing. I think people find statistics anxiety provoking, and I don't think that they should be or need to be. I think if we understand evidence and data, it can actually give us the confidence to make good decisions, to make decisions that work for us. And that for me is the most relaxing way to parent.
Yes. I mean, I think that it's one of those things where we're all gathering, right? We're gathering data. None of us are experts. We're all doing it for the first time. Whether it's your second kid or your third kid, it's your first time in that experience. And I think it's that's why we sort of we lean on our village, right? Our village of experts, our village of people. Earlier in this episode, we spoke with Grammy-winning pop singer and newly minted author Meghan Trainor. She just wrote a book called Dear Mama, which came about when she was searching for the TMI take on all things pregnancy. So she really gets into her experience. And like you, she couldn't find what she was looking for, so she created it. I'm curious, what did it feel like when you put expecting better, like when you put that, your take, what did it feel like?
So putting out a book is a little, it's like a little bit like having a baby. It's like more predictable because they tell you really far in advance when it's coming out. But it has this the same kind of loss of control aspect, which is you work so hard and you think so much about this, and then all of a sudden it's kind of out there and it has its own life. And the experience of expecting better in particular, you know, that book sold fine at the beginning, but it's actually sold more over time than it did initially. And so it's been interesting to watch kind of how that works and to, and it's one of the things that I makes me the happiest is that, you know, I think people read this and then they send it to their friends and that's great. I mean, I think that the magic is when people tell me that something I wrote helped them. That's like, that's why that's why I'm doing this. And that's great.
So beyond your books, you know, you have your newsletter. Every parent I know follows you on Instagram. You've birthed a full-blown community of data-informed and interested parents. Did you have any idea that your work and approach would catch like wildfire?
No. I mean, I think, look, a decade ago, Expecting Better, it came out.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm going to write this book. I felt like I had to write. Like it felt, I mean, my guess is that Megan Trainor felt the same way. It's like, you're just like vomiting it out. You know, like I have to get this out in the world. People need to know, or not even people need to know. Like I need to share this because that's what feels like I have to do it. And so then I sort of, after Expecting Better came out, I was like, okay, so like I did that. I felt like I had to get it out. And it was a very long time between then and when I wrote my second book, which was really kind of the moment at which I shifted into doing much more of what I do now. And that was a much more conscious shift of sort of thinking about, okay, this approach does seem like it's resonating with people. There may be more that I can do with it and more ways that I can sort of help people with this.
That's amazing. People are so opinionated, of course, when it comes to parenting. And I know some of your work gets strong reactions, like your data analysis on self-soothing and feeding. Which topics do you think need more data to support parents' mental health?
I think all topics need more data to support parents' mental health.
Yes.
But I mean, I would say something more general there, which is in many of the topics in parenting that we study, I would put breastfeeding in this camp. I would put, you know, different kinds of sleep approaches in this camp. I would put, you know, postpartum recovery in this camp. Almost everything, we get very, very laser focused on the baby, which is important. The baby is important. But the transition into being a mom, being a parent of either any type is also really hard and really important. And that gets put by the wayside too much in both our kind of popular interaction, but also in our research. So I actually think there's just not enough research in which that outcome is at a minimum considered alongside these other outcomes. You know, you can find a million articles about the impacts of breastfeeding on IQ and very few articles on the impacts of breastfeeding on mental health for mom. And I think that that is an imbalance that impacts how we talk about these issues and impacts how the kinds of support that we provide parents.
You know, you just wrote this article, What to Do When What's Best is Impossible, which, you know, we were all just passing around because we, you know, here at Bobby, we've done campaigns around your best is best and redefining best. And in your article, you apply the economic concepts of first best and second best to parenting. We loved this take. Tell me what inspired this revelation.
In general, so in economics, we have, as you say, we have the idea of sort of first best and second best, and they actually mean something very specific and not actually that interesting in my view. But they, but I like the language very much because I think we often when we're talking about choices, we have this idea of what I talked about as like first best or the outer darkness. Like there's a best thing to do and everything else is terrible. And that I think is problematic for at least two reasons. You know, one is that since many times you can't do the first best, then people just feel bad. So it's just literally like the same thing that you would do, but just feeling bad about it. But the other is that when we frame it like that, we lose an opportunity to help people navigate within this not first best space. And there are a lot of places in parenting where actually there is a very clear, like within the things that are not the sort of like first best, there's a hierarchy and there's ways to, you know, co-sleep more or less safely. And by just saying never co-sleep, we lose the opportunity to help people think about, okay, if you're going to do this, there are more and less ways, safe ways to do it. And let us explain that. And I think that lost opportunity means that people make worse choices than they would. So I'll give you one very specific and small example, which is, you know, we hear a lot about screen time and like not having too much screen time. And, you know, I've written before about like, actually, I think a reasonable amount of screen time is okay. And a lot of that evidence is pretty flawed. But it's true. Like many parents, I try to kind of limit the amount of screen time. in the morning, yep. I have two children and my husband works, like commutes to work. And so typically I am the one like getting them out of the door in the morning. And my 12-year-old takes a much longer time to get ready. There's like a whole hair situation. I mean, she's like a, you know, she's got like outfits, just different stuff. I mean, so not forever, yep. but like she definitely takes longer. And so there was a long period yeah. in which with the 8-year-old, there was just a lot of conflict. Like he wanted to hang out. I needed to do the dishes. He was angry that she was taking a long time. And, you know, I realized I was trying to achieve this like first best of like, everybody's like, we're getting out the door. And before we leave, we're all like reading like an interesting book and playing like a board game or something. Mm-hmm. Instead, I just yeah. told him, you can play Pokemon Go. And now when he finishes breakfast, he picks up the iPad, he plays Pokemon Go, he brushes his teeth, he comes upstairs and he plays Pokemon Go until his sister comes down. And it is second best. It's not, nobody in the like public health screen time is telling me like, oh, it's great for your kid to play like a lot of extra Pokemon Go. But it really works. And it means that like our getting out the door is much nicer. You know, he has a tremendous yep. number of Wiffle Puffs or Wiffle Tuffs, Wigglytuff something. So oh my we're pretty far ahead on the Pokemon training.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and then also they're in charge of their own thing that they're doing, right? And not constantly depending on you for this, that, and the other in that moment. And I think, you know, I would say, oh, well, they're maintaining independence. It's great. Finish up breakfast. Go do what you want.
Developing their different skills, video game skills.
What's your advice for parents on how and where to find second best parenting support? You know, and credible information that makes them feel like, okay, here's an array of ways I can do it.
Yeah. So I think the first step to that is actually recognizing when the first best is impossible. So I think one of the things that gets in the way of doing this is people just continually saying, well, tomorrow I'll get there. Tomorrow I'll get there. You know, I just need to kill myself to get into this, you know, to this particular, outcome. I think sometimes the most important step is just recognizing like, this isn't working. And like, actually this mm-hmm. thing that I'm trying, like, this is not working. I got to step back and think about what's the way I can make this work that feels manageable and also, you know, serves whatever is the outcome that, that I want. And then I think the more complicated question is sometimes it's not clear what that is. And sometimes it's hard to get mm-hmm. that information. So, you know, it's in our public health messaging in particular, we don't spend a lot of time on second best. We spend a lot of time on first best. Mm-hmm. And we sort of bury in the end, well, here's like some other options. And I think that, you know, mm-hmm. if you dig as a parent, you can often find that pediatricians tend to be actually quite reasonable about many things I find. And if you come yes. and say, look, this isn't working, what's my next thing? They'll say, oh, you know, actually here's the next thing, but you gotta know to ask. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I love that advice. Our pediatrician is so she just cuts to the chase. She's like, we're still dealing. Our almost 4-year-old still sucks her two fingers, right? Like pacifier style. And I've checked in about it a few times. And the pediatrician's like, is she making friends? Is she talking in class? Like, does she have a tool to self-soothe herself? I was like, yes, yes, and yes. She's like, let it go. Don't worry about it. And it was like one of those things where I was going to have this whole ceremonious approach when she turned 2 to
take away her fingers. What was your approach?
I don't know. There was no approach. I was like trying to give her different soothing techniques, like put your hand on your heart and take deep breaths. It's not, you know, but our pediatrician was just like, it's fine. It's like, she's good. She has the tool she needs. No, don't take it away.
Our pediatrician is one of my favorite people because for exactly this reason that like, she's very good at like big picture. Like, is this something you should yeah. worry about? And she just like, mostly it's like, no.
Okay, shifting gears a little bit to returning to work. Earlier on this episode, Megan shared how she felt super guilty jumping back into work 3 months after her son Riley was born, which we can all relate to, right? I know you have a whole TED Talk on this. Can you share some helpful data on going back to work to help parents manage this tough transition?
The first thing I would say is that, you know, a lot of people start with the concern of like, is this bad for my baby? Is it going to be bad for my baby that I go back to work? And I want to separate out like the need for parental leave, which is real. And it is totally yes. unconscionable that the US has no paid parental leave. And so it clearly we should have a period, 3 to 4 months of paid leave. Now let's move to, okay, like we've had the 3 to 4 months of paid leave. Now in this imaginary world we live in, now should I worry about going back to work? From the standpoint of your kid, yep. looking at the data, no, there is just not evidence in either direction to say that, you know, mom, that both parents working is better or worse. It all looks about the same and is totally swamped mm-hmm. by every other aspect of the home environment. And that goes also for, you know, the care choices you make. So nanny versus daycare, like, again, you can find small differences on some dimensions in various directions here, but mm-hmm. the sort of big picture of the data is that these are all good choices that can be great for your kid. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I tell them is like, put that part aside. By putting mm-hmm. that part aside, you then open up the opportunity to actually ask the question, like, what is going to work for me? Like, what does my family, and not just me, like personally, but me kind of are the adults in the family. And sometimes the way I phrase this is like, what is the optimal adult work hour configuration? So rather than the way we often ask it, which is like, should I be a stay-at-home mom? To like recognize that like, that is not the only person who can stay in the house. And that is not the only way to change your time. So I think recognizing and allowing for the possibility that you may want to have a job, that it may be that mm-hmm. that is the thing that makes you the happiest in terms of your like global happiness. And like, mm-hmm. that's awesome. Final thing is when you first go back to work, it is just going to be hard. And that doesn't really mean you made mm-hmm. a bad choice. It just is part of being a parent and feeling torn between different things that you love to do. And that's just, mm-hmm. that's okay.
One thing you brought up, so you brought up paid family leave. Hot topic. We would love to hear what the data says about paid leave at large. What have you uncovered so far?
The data is extremely clear that paid leave is good. That evidence is so vast as to be almost boring. Like much of what I talk about is like,
right,
totally. Is like, you know, well, different people have said different things about this. And, you know, we have right. to like suss out the best data. This is like literally every single piece of data says the same thing. So, okay. There's also, which is interesting, some quite good data suggesting that paternity leave or leave for the non-birthing parent can have beneficial effects, especially if it's sort of like flexible early on. So there's sort of evidence that like allowing mm-hmm. yeah. dads to take days in the beginning in a flexible way can actually improve health for mom. So there's a sort mm-hmm. of like when we're done with maternity leave, I think we should get on the paternity leave situation as well.
Yes. Cheers. Hear, hear. We all agree. Shifting gears a bit to feeding, you know, obviously we are all about shaking stigmas at Bobby around nutrition, about feeding, and we support breastfeeding, we support combo feeding, we support formula feeding, whatever, donor milk, all the options, pumping. I did combo feeding for both my kids, but we also know that things rarely go according to the perfect plan. And I would say formula is still branded as the second best yeah. option, but for many birthing parents, it is the best. And I know that even Megan's feeding mantra, she had a whole chapter called Fed is Best, and her mantra was, I'm doing my best, which we're big fans of. What kind of data do you think can help, or maybe it doesn't exist yet, neutralize the stigma around formula feeding?
So I've talked a lot in different work about the sort of evidence on breastfeeding, which I think, you know, suggests that there are some small benefits, but they are much smaller mm-hmm. than are commonly cited. And I think that information has sort of started to percolate out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But where I think we do need to go with more data is really to give people a better understanding of the range of feeding experiences that people are having. You know, I think we often think mm-hmm. about this as like there's exclusive breastfeeding and then there's like exclusive formula feeding. And like those are the sort of the only two things, maybe some pumping in the middle. But most sure. people's experiences are way different than that. Most people's experiences involve yep. some of both of those. They involve pumping and mm-hmm. formula and breast milk and something like all of these things at the same time. And not necessarily in conflict. So it can be the case that formula can help you achieve the breastfeeding goals you want. Like maybe the mm-hmm. framing of sort of, there's a toolbox of foods, right? Like it's like right. It has boobs in it and also a pump and also some formula. And you kind of like got to figure out what are you constructing out of this toolbox? Rather than saying there's like two different toolboxes and you need to pick the one, the sort of box that you're in.
I love the toolbox analogy because I definitely used all of the tools and all of the tools extended my breastfeeding journey in my case, right? Suddenly I was like, oh, the pressure's off. I can actually keep going with this.
Most decisions that we make about something this important are made in a thoughtful manner. And I bet that you made your decision, whatever it was, in a way that's thoughtful. And you should have confidence in that.
No, and I think, I mean, for me, sometimes it's of course, I need to find the confidence within myself. I need to ask my pediatrician. I need to, you know, check what Emily Oster says. But then the other thing that's so huge is your village, right? Whether it's your parent text thread, whoever is in your caregiving community. And I think, you know, so many of us parents come to realize, and Megan also spoke about, is the importance of this, the community that has your back, whether it's in real life or via a text thread or Instagram. You know, what's your advice for expecting a new parents on how to build their own community of support?
So a couple of pieces of this. One is it's very valuable to have people whose kids are a bit older. And, you know, it has to be the right people, because sometimes people with older kids will be like, well, I don't remember. My kid was perfect. But like the people who you like, you know, the good people with the older kids, they actually can provide
the honest people.
They can provide perspective both on how it's hard and like how it gets easier. And they can pull you out of some of these things that are like so seem so meaningful in the moment. And I think a little bit of that perspective can be kind of valuable. Also, people with older kids are not themselves as tired. And so when you call them and you're like, please, I need to shower, they're just like, I'm there. Yes. Like I will be over in a moment. And then I think you also want the people who are in it, like in it with you right now. And who can just like tell you, wow, like me too.
Yep.
This sucks.
So, okay. Village, older parents, great. Check, check. The honest parents, the real ones. And speaking of real ones, you are on our Bobby motherboard and we're so pumped.
So excited.
As a stigma shaking, culture shifting parent, talk to us about why it's important for you to show up with a brand like Bobby.
I feel like Bobby is doing a lot of what I would like to do with messaging, which is to try to help people make the decisions that work for them. I mean, I think underlying all of the stuff, everything that I do is to try to help people get to a place where they are happy and confident in the parenting that they're doing. And I think that is a core value of what Bobby's trying to do, is to embrace many different journeys, many different choices, many different approaches in a way that prioritizes mental health and gets us all to a kind of happier and more relaxed way of parenting, which is what I want to do too.
Amazing. Yes. Here for it. And also for you listeners, this is just a sneak peek of all that we're going to be talking about with Emily. So stay tuned, because she will have another episode on the pod and we will be taking some listener questions and topics. So keep an eye out. Thank you so much for joining us, Emily. This has been amazing.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to do more.
Yes. And can you share where our listeners can find you and your important work?
So you can find me at parentdata.org. That's my newsletter website. And you can find me on Instagram at Prof. Emily Oster.
Thank you so much to Emily Oster and Megan Trainor for joining me today. I feel like our listeners will leave this conversation feeling more empowered and confident and ready to fire up their parent text thread. So excited to have both of you on this year's Bobby Motherboard. Can't wait for what's in store. Be sure to follow Bobby on Instagram at Bobby for all Milk Drunk updates and sign up for the Milk Drunk newsletter at milk-drunk.com. If you or someone you know is Bobby curious, head to hibobby.com/dearfuturemama for 15% off your first organic formula order. Milk Drunk is powered by Bobby, hosted by me, Angelica Temple, and produced by Beth Rowe, Mary Kelly, and the team at Full Picture Productions. If you're liking what we're shaking here at Milk Drunk Pod, be sure to subscribe. You don't want to miss a thing. Also, if you have topics you want to hear discussed or have a hot parenting take, our DMs are always open